Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Monday, May the 8th, but it feels like winter never really left here in Bonn. Hello and welcome to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And me, Wanjiko Mwaura, in Germany.
And here's what's coming up. What fate awaits the remaining 113 Chibok girls after 82 others were released from the terror group Boko Haram?
Well, it's very difficult to answer that question directly, but I think that the recent release of some of the Chibok hostages, which have occurred now on two separate occasions, does provide one optimism.
We also bring you what you've been saying on that topic and more.
And Europe breathes a sigh of relief after French voters elect Emmanuel Macron as the next president.
Emmanuel Macron is carrying the hopes of millions of French citizens, as well as many in Germany and all over Europe.
Stay tuned to the stories, plus all your interactions on social media right after this brief.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has spoken favorably of Emmanuel Macron's French presidential election win, saying at a party event in Berlin on Monday that his pro-EU stance stands for openness to the world. Merkel also spoke on bilateral relations with Paris, saying she wants to help France tackle its rising rate of unemployment and work together on common problems.
Today, Germany and France are facing shared challenges. We're facing the challenge of leading our countries and the European Union towards a safe and successful future.
Merkel is due to meet outgoing French President François Hollande and said she would meet soon with the centrist president-elect. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has released the names of 82 Chibok schoolgirls, publishing the list early Monday before Buhari went to London for medical checkups. Nigeria's government said five militant Boko Haram commanders were released in exchange for the girls' freedom. However, further details about the exchange has not yet been released. 113 schoolgirls still remain held captive by Boko Haram militants. The UN Refugee Agency announced that more than 1 million children have fled escalating violence in South Sudan. A senior UN agency official described the crisis as the most worrying in the world, warning that an entire generation could be lost in the North African country. Conflict began more than 2 years ago when President Salva Kiir fired his deputy Riek Machar in 2013. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Racial tensions have flared in the South African town of Kolnini on Monday after a court granted bail for two white farmers who were accused of killing a black teenage boy. The death sparked angry protests in the town, with some protesters looting and setting a house on fire. Incidents between white farmer owners and black farm hands have become more common in South Africa. A court magistrate told reporters the case has divided the community.
It is indeed correct that the death of the deceased has in fact divided the community of Kolini along racial lines, as evident from the two petitions that were submitted in this court.
A large car bomb has rocked Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, with police saying that at least five people were killed. A witness in the area said gunfire followed the blast. There was no immediate claim of responsibility. Meanwhile, at least three Somali soldiers were killed by a roadside bomb just north of the capital earlier on Monday. Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab militants claimed the roadside bombing. And now in sports, Germany is taking on Team Russia in international ice hockey action in Cologne, so far losing to the Russians 5-0. The German team lost to Team Sweden over the weekend 7-2. Also tonight, Team USA faces off against Sweden, and Finland competes against the Czech Republic in ice hockey tourney action. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You're listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
Let's begin in Nigeria, where there's relief for some and anxiety for others. That's how best to describe the emotions of the parents of the Chibok girls after the names of 82 freed girls were released by the presidency on Monday. President Muhammadu Buhari has pledged to support the girls after meeting them in Abuja. He later startled the country by announcing that he will leave for a second medical trip to London. I've been speaking to Ryan Cummings, a security analyst with Signal Risk in South Africa, and I began by asking him whether there are hopes of finding the remaining 113 Chibok girls.
Well, it's very difficult to answer that question directly, but I think that the recent release of some of the Chibok hostages, which have occurred now on two separate occasions, does provide one optimism that the Nigerian government can go ahead and secure the release of the remaining hostages. I think a key component of this hypothesis is the fact that Nigerian government and Boko Haram are open to negotiations, as has been highlighted with the most recent hostage exchange, but also Boko Haram commanders have been detained by the Nigerian government. So the continuation of these negotiations, which have been mediated by various aid agencies, I think is a positive sign.
This is the first time that a group of them has been released in exchange for Boko Haram prisoners. The question is, why wasn't this done before, like earlier on?
Well, that's an interesting question, because there were claims that in October 2016, when a group of 21 Chibok hostages were released to the Nigerian government by Boko Haram, aid agencies that had mediated the negotiations actually claimed that the Nigerian government had released four Boko Haram commanders in exchange for some of the Chibok hostages. This claim was vehemently denied by Nigeria's vice president, who stated that there was no hostage exchange that took place. But he did, however, state that the Nigerian government does not rule out engaging in negotiations with Boko Haram and obviously releasing some of their detainees if it means it will secure the release of the Chibok girls and also other hostages held by the group. So the perception could be that the Nigerian government has seen that, or at least prioritized that, the release of the Chibok hostages are more important than releasing some Boko Haram detainees and potentially enhancing the group's operational capabilities, and has taken this gamble to ensure that President Buhari kind of reinforces and upholds his pre-election commitment, which was to ensure that he would secure the safe release of all of the Chibok hostages. From that aspect, it's quite positive. And I think it's also importantly bought him some capital, political capital, in terms of the ongoing issues which are centering around his health status and his absence from the Nigerian presidency at the time when there are so many issues affecting the Nigerian state.
Human rights groups say that some of the girls may have been used by Boko Haram to carry out suicide bombings. How likely is it that some of the girls could have died in this way?
Well, there's definitely a distinct possibility. There is evidence to suggest that many Boko Haram hostages or kidnapped victims, specifically females, have been used as suicide bombers and as other roles within the group's insurgent operations. So there is a distinct possibility that some of the Chibok hostages themselves may have either been killed as a result of being suicide bombers or, you know, in other military operations which have kind of targeted Boko Haram's positions across northeast Nigeria. But there's also a counter theory, which was derived from testimonies of other Boko Haram kidnap victims, which suggested that the Chibok girls were actually treated differently to other victims. And this was likely due to how much of an asset they were to Boko Haram in terms of being a bargaining chip with the Nigerian government. And if this is indeed the case, then one would assume that it would be unlikely that Boko Haram insurgency would have used such a high-value commodity to kind of undertake a suicide bombing that was going to target a security installation or a marketplace in a city such as Maiduguri or other towns and urban centres across northeastern Nigeria.
Signal Risk's security analyst Ryan Cummings speaking from Cape Town.
Now, to your social media comments, Lamine Fofana says, from Quebec in Canada, says, good news on the return of 82 Chibok girls. The negotiations should be continuing for the remaining 113 girls. And he continues to add on, as for President Mohamed Buhari's departure to London, Nigerians should look into all possibilities to know what the cause of President Buhari's health or ill health is.
And there's a comment coming in from Martin Stanley from Nigeria, and he says, we still hope that the remaining 113 girls are alive. And Obiechina Peter Abugu, also from Nigeria, says the release of 82 Chibok girls by Boko Haram shows that the federal government of Nigeria has engaged into a negotiation with the sect Boko Haram to free the released girls. Besides, other information sources say federal government of Nigeria swapped the girls for undisclosed number of Boko Haram suspects. We found out that there were actually five commanders, as Alia reported.
Yes, indeed.
Right. Now, moving on to Europe, and there's still celebrations in France for Emmanuel Macron's supporters after French voters gave a resounding oui and elected Macron as their next president on Sunday. The 39-year-old former minister for economy will become France's youngest president in modern France after defeating far-right presidential candidate Marine Le Pen. Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel said she was very happy with Macron's victory and has promised to support him in tackling unemployment. Ine Camus with more on the story.
Centrist independent candidate Emmanuel Macron has defeated far-right nationalist Marine Le Pen in Sunday's French national election. Macron won 66% of the vote in Sunday's presidential runoff. The outcome has been hailed by his supporters as a win against rising populist sentiment in Europe. Le Pen had run on a platform which included closing France's borders, quitting the European Union's common currency, and getting rid of trade deals. However, she has still achieved a record result for her Front National Party, receiving at least 10.5 million votes, more than double the number her father Jean-Marie Le Pen, running on the same platform, achieved in 2002. At 39 years old, Macron is set to become France's youngest president in modern France. He was relatively unknown until he briefly served as outgoing President François Hollande's economic minister for 2 years before he quit last year, announcing he was running for president. Macron has never held elected office. Leaders around the world congratulated the president-elect on Monday, including German Chancellor Angela Merkel.
Emmanuel Macron is carrying the hopes of millions of French citizens, as well as many in Germany and all over Europe. He led a courageous pro-European campaign. He stands for cosmopolitanism. He explicitly fights for the social market economy. And we know that France and Germany are connected fatefully.
Macron is expected to be a tough negotiator over Brexit, with British Prime Minister Theresa May reacting to the implications of his victory this afternoon.
Now, yesterday, a new French president was elected. He was elected with a strong mandate, which he can take into as a strong position in the negotiations. The UK, we need to ensure we've got an equally strong mandate and an equally strong negotiating position.
Brexit talks are expected to kick into full gear after British snap elections in June. Official election results in France are expected to be announced by the Constitutional Council on Thursday.
Ineke Mills with that report.
Now, Crispin, just over to social media, where people are actually, a lot of people are actually amazed at how young the current French president-to-be very soon is, at 39. Can you imagine that?
39 years and he's already president of France.
Yes, indeed. We have several leaders, African leaders, who were already in power before he was born. Now, moving on, Chidi Asoigwe says, congratulations to Emmanuel Macron. He seems to be a man of his word. Meanwhile, someone else compares elections in his country, Kenya. At I Fort Knox says, elections in France are conducted by the Interior Ministry, not special independent bodies like our International Election and Boundaries Committee.
Right. And then there's a comment from Zaki from Sudan who says it is the spirit of the youth that made Macron win the election. Lamine Fofana Gbla in Montreal, Quebec, Canada says congratulations to the president-elect, Mr. Emmanuel Macron of France. I hope Mr. Macron will restructure France and all French colonial nations in Africa.
Well, and in case you also want to contribute, do go over to our Facebook page, DW Africa. And a comment here from Edmund says, congratulations to Mr. Macron.
Right. And then we have another one from Isaac Ihosa Godwin, writing from Liberia. And he says, congratulations to France president-elect Emmanuel Jean-Michel Macron. I was rooting for him, even in Liberia, he says.
Yes, indeed. It's quite interesting to see the kind of responses that the French elections have gotten from people in African countries as well.
That's right, Manjiko. Going back to the story of the Chibok girls being released in Nigeria, we have a comment coming from Klaus Stecker. He says, after getting the girls back physically, I hope they will be well received by their neighbours, families, villages, and get all the support to reintegrate them into a normal life.
Keep commenting. The page is DW Africa.
Thanks for staying with Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And with me, Wanjiku Mwaura.
And coming up in the next 15 minutes, fighting in South Sudan has forced more than 2 million children to flee from their homes.
We are seeing in refugee camps children who have witnessed violence, who have seen their loved ones die.
And we asked the question, what could be done to avert this situation with immediate effect? Keep writing to us on Facebook, DW Africa, and we'll have some of your comments later in the show.
And in our health segment, we travel to Cameroon to find out how one community is dealing with epilepsy. The stories plus a look at the Bundesliga and Champions League semi-final return leg in just a few minutes. But now we start with some troubling news. The UN on Monday said more than 2 million children in South Sudan have fled their homes as a result of the conflict. The future of a generation is truly on the brink, is how UNICEF's Regional Director for Eastern and Southern Africa put it. Teresa Ongoro is Regional Spokesperson for UNHCR in East Africa, Horn of Africa and the Great Lakes region. She's been describing to me what these refugee children have to endure.
Refugee children have become the defining face of this emergency. The devastating conflict has been going on for 3-4 years now. And I think what we're seeing both in refugee camps and in displacement sites inside South Sudan speaks to the tragedy of this conflict. We are seeing in refugee camps children who have witnessed violence, who have seen their loved ones die, who have gone through physical upheaval, fear, stress.
And what is the United Nations doing to help these kind of children?
As usual, we're receiving the children along with the caregivers. We have almost 20,000 elderly persons now responsible for families. We have women arriving on their own who have lost their husbands to the conflict. Some of them are pregnant. They give birth on the way. So in any case, all of them, when they cross the border, I'm speaking to you from Uganda, but this is happening in all of the neighboring countries. The priority is to move them away from the border and then try to give them immediate assistance, food, medical care, shelter.
What are the regional countries like Kenya, Uganda? How are they helping to alleviate the suffering of these children?
First of all, we do have to commend the countries of asylum that have continued to keep their borders open for refugees from South Sudan. And for the host communities who are on the front line, the host communities are actually the first responders, if I could refer to them as such, who share food, who share water with the people, and then raise the alarm with their local authorities, and then the aid agencies move in. The countries of asylum provide security for refugees. They now find themselves in a stable environment. They're providing health services. Refugees, for example, in Uganda are using the medical facilities that are meant for Ugandan citizens. Where it's possible, children are able to go to school, but this is overstretching the capacities of these public resources. And therefore, we're appealing to the international community, to the private sector, to come to the aid of countries of asylum.
UNHCR Regional Spokesperson for East Africa, Horn of Africa and the Great Lakes region, Teresa Ongoro.
And remember, we asked the question, what could be done to avert this situation with immediate effect? Ben Mensah from Ghana says it's very pathetic that in the 21st century, we allow war to displace people, especially children. African leaders must learn to accept defeat when they lose an election, or they should implement proper policies to improve the living standards of their citizens.
And Abdul Aziz Mohamed Sani from Kumasi, Ghana, says it's a sad situation. I wish the international community can get leaders of both factions in a neutral country that they both respect for counseling. They should be made to understand that the harm they are doing to their country as a result of their selfishness. And he adds that this may work if it's done properly.
Suleiman Ba from Italy says a dialogue with the rebels, the president should open the doors of negotiations with those that are against him. He should do everything possible to understand what the rebels want and why they are not in support of his government.
Right, so keep those comments coming at DW Africa Facebook page.
Health check.
Epilepsy is a chronic neurological disease that can cause sudden seizures due to abnormal electrical activity in the brain. Sadly, in Cameroon, some people still view epilepsy as witchcraft. Cameroonian health authorities have now launched a campaign to educate the public on the illness and fight stigma associated with it. Moki Kinzeka visited Bort Makak, a village in the center region of Cameroon, where a staggering 15% of the population suffer from epilepsy.
A witch doctor in Bot Makak village in the central region of Cameroon washes people who are suffering from epilepsy in the Sanaga River. Among the six people he has received this day is 17-year-old Menduga Theodore. His elder brother, Menduga Pierre, says he turned to the local witch doctor for treatment to get rid of his epilepsy seizures. Many people in the area, like 45-year-old businesswoman Magdalene Ahinda, believe epilepsy is a punishment for wrongdoing.
There are mystical things that are thrown on people, families, that do bad things. There's a woman near our place with all her children suffering from epilepsy.
People in the region have now been invited to come to the Makak District Hospital by Cameroonian and French doctors. Cameroonian-born neurologist Victor Sine says they want to educate people about epilepsy and the real causes of the disease.
L'épilepsie, c'est pas une punition divine.
Epilepsy is not divine punishment. It's not witchcraft. It's not a mystical, but a simple disease like hypertension or diabetes. It's simply a brain disease. I do not understand why, up to this present moment, people continue to think that epilepsy is a mystical illness or divine punishment. These are beliefs that have no scientific basis.
19-year-old Victorine Doba, who has lived with the disease for 9 years, says she is regaining her health thanks to modern medicine. Since she takes her prescribed medicine, her seizures have stopped. 15% of the population of the Mbam Valley region of Cameroon suffer from epilepsy, according to Cameroon's Ministry of Health. French-born Dr. Scott Leon, who is visiting to help stop the disease, says the close proximity to the 600-kilometer-long river Sanaga could be a potential factor, as the river serves as a breeding ground for parasites that cause diseases like trypanosomiasis or sleeping sickness, meningitis and cerebral malaria that affect the brain.
Et ici, on est sur la piste depuis longtemps.
We think that there is a link between onchocerciasis and epilepsy.
Et l'épilepsie.
All areas close to the river are affected. The situation, however, is especially dire in Bot Makak because of the irrational beliefs about the disease, according to the government of Cameroon. The international non-governmental organization Epilepsy Society reports that 12 million people in Africa are affected by epilepsy, and 80% are not treated with readily available modern drugs. The NGO also says there is an acute shortage of medical staff in hinterlands. Victor Sine says the first solution is creating awareness about the disease and its real causes.
Le malade qui souffre l'épilepsie.
People suffering from epilepsy should know that it is a simple disease. If we want to do away with epilepsy, patients should not hide when they are sick. Their families should not say they do not have someone suffering from the illness, because all prejudices around this illness are false.
Les préjugés qui tournent autour de la maladie sont fausses.
DW correspondent Moki Kinzeka compiled that report. And to talk about sports, I turn to DW Sports editor Felix Tamsut. RB Leipzig has joined Bayern Munich in next season's Champions League. How do you see them faring among Europe's best teams?
Well, RB Leipzig, they're a young team. They have a very young squad, promising squad. That was entirely the surprising aspect that they've had in this year's Bundesliga, that even though they are very young as a team, they managed to do very well and to adopt a very certain style of play. Unfortunately for them, that doesn't count when it comes to Champions League football. Experience matters, and they're going to learn it the hard way. But once they do, they will develop as a club, and I would assume they're going to be bigger and bigger as time goes by.
Okay, now let's talk about the third
automatic spot to playing the Champions League. It was played out on Saturday between Borussia Dortmund and Hoffenheim. Pierre Aubameyang again became the hero of that game, scoring. What did you make of Dortmund's performance in general?
Dortmund had a very solid performance against Hoffenheim, which is a very hard team to play against. Their defense is solid. Their counter-attacking skills are something that every single defense in the Bundesliga is aware of. But Dortmund managed to keep them at bay. And it's a big achievement considering how Hoffenheim's season played out. Marco Reus played well. Aubameyang, as we've mentioned, did his job properly. And considering recent rumors that basically now come up in German media about a row between Dortmund CEO Watzke and Tuchel, as well as the players, you couldn't see it in the ground. You couldn't see it on the pitch. They did their job properly. And as far as they're concerned, it's a checkbox ticked.
Aubameyang now is a joint top scorer with Robert Lewandowski of Bayern Munich. Do you see Aubameyang now overtaking Lewandowski with the two remaining match days?
I think it's likely, considering the fact that Dortmund still has a lot to play for this season. Automatic qualification to the Champions League is a big deal. It means more time to get prepared to the season. It means more rest time. And I think Dortmund know to appreciate that. And that would mean that they have more to play for. And considering the remaining fixtures, Bayern also has to play Leipzig over the weekend, which isn't going to be easy. I think it's fair, it's safe to bet on Aubameyang being the top scorer.
Back to the Champions League now. It returns to action on Tuesday and Wednesday. Both Atletico and Monaco need, a miracle to overturn their heavy first leg defeats. What's your bet on which team now will proceed to the finals in Cardiff?
Well, football is a very unusual sport sometimes, but it's going to take a very, very unusual match day in order to see both Monaco and Atletico go through. I would say it's going to be a big, big surprise. We haven't seen such a big surprise since the quarterfinals, basically. But I wouldn't say it's very likely. Juventus and Real are both well-organized teams, well-trained, well-prepared. It's not very likely, and I don't think you'll be able to find a person that is going to bet against those two playing in the final.
DW's sports editor, Felix Tamsut.
And now we go over to social radio, and this is where we get to talk about things that you have been talking about on social media.
That's right, Wanjiku. And I hear there's a story about the mountain gorillas in Rwanda that's making rounds on social media.
Absolutely. And this is going with the hashtag GorillaGate. So the Rwandan Development Board today announced an increase, announced an increase in the price of gorilla permits from $750 to $1,500 for all visitors effective immediately.
A new exclusive package for tourists who wish to book an entire family of gorillas was also introduced at $15,000 and will receive exclusive personalized tour guide services. In other words, what Rwanda is saying is that, you know, if you can't afford, just watch gorillas on National Geographic.
Absolutely. But Miss Claire Akamazi, the chief executive officer at Rwanda Development Board, stated that they want to make sure that the communities living near the park areas receive a bigger share of tourism revenues to fund development projects and empower them economically. So I think you can see that they have a long-term vision here.
So what are people saying about these new price increases?
Lots of concern. A user called Claude asked, "No warning? What about those that have already purchased their permits or are now in the air to Kigali? What about travel agencies? Really?" A lot of shock there.
And there was an important info that there's a press statement which went on to clarify that, saying that the price increase will not affect tourists who had already purchased their tickets at the time of that announcement.
Yes, indeed. And Edmund Kagira says, "So now they are called mountain dolilas." He's playing on the lots of dollars that are now making up the fee.
All right. And then there's Hughes Regis, who says, "How's that for yes, you want to visit, but we'll make sure you can't afford it."
Ooh la la. Lots of tours and travel companies also spoke up against this, such as Captured in Africa, who took to Twitter saying, "We are extremely worried about this. No tourism product can justify a 100% increase in price. Seems very extreme."
Right. And neighboring Ugandans are also jumping onto that opportunity as well.
Yes, indeed. Well, where will you watch your gorillas from?
National Geographic, I would say. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you can find more stories by downloading our DW app or follow us on our DW Africa Facebook page. From me, Crispin Mwakideo.
With me, Wenji Kumora.
Goodbye and take care.